Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Hello and welcome to Off the Ball Saturday panel, coming to you live from Páirc Uí Chaoimh for the first time. We have a fantastic panel of guests here. Two of them are those kind of icons where they only need to hear the Christian name to know who we're talking about. The first one is Sonia O'Sullivan, Olympic silver medalist. Welcome, Sonia.
Thank you.
We also have 18-time Olympic silver medalist, Rena Buckley.
Thank you.
Also here today with us is the editor, sports editor of the Southern Star newspaper, Kieran McCarthy.
Thank you.
And at the far end also, Christine O'Donovan. Christine is a deputy sports director of UCC Sport.
Thank you.
Welcome everybody, and welcome to Cork. This is the first time we've been here. We have a live audience here as well, which is fantastic, because the reason we're here today is the Saturday panel is brought to you by the Camogie Association as part of their new hashtag Go Together campaign to encourage people to go to the All-Ireland finals on September the 9th, because nothing really beats going to matches together and seeing the games firsthand. And people get a chance to do that today in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, because there are two All-Ireland quarterfinals. Waterford and Tipperary, and Dublin and Galway. So anybody who's here already will get a chance to see those later on, and we will be talking about them later on. But first, we couldn't start today, and Sonia, I'm going to start with you. We could not start today without talking about hockey, something we probably never thought we'd be talking about. But imagine Ireland, in 25 minutes or less, are playing in a World Cup semi-final. How amazing is that?
It's fantastic, you know, and I think it's really, you know, got the whole country behind the team, you know, as the girls have progressed, you know, now up to the quarter, what are we?
Semi-finals.
Is fantastic this afternoon. So I think a lot of people have blocked off their afternoon. So we'll all be rushing out of here too.
Everybody will be rushing out of here. I picked a great day to be doing this Saturday panel, let's say. By the way, listeners, if there is any news or scores, we will be bringing you the updates for it. Christine, Cork is a hockey city. Dublin, Cork and Belfast are seen as three big hockey cities. So do you have hockey players in UCC? Do you know any? Or what's the place of hockey in Cork even?
Hockey is very strong in Cork, and we have three or four strong women's teams playing in Cork, and they play in the Munster Senior League.
Yeah.
And equivalent to men's. UCC itself fields five teams every weekend in the Munster Senior Leagues.
Wow.
And for the last 6 or 7 weeks, we've had several international matches in the Mardyke. We had Six Nations under 16 boys and girls in there, and actually in the build up to this World Cup, we had Ireland and Japan.
That's right.
A 3-match series here in Cork, so we'd hope to say we have played a small part in getting to where they did today.
You're definitely supporting them.
And we also had the men's side as well, played France in a couple of series matches.
Yeah,
so you know, it's
a town where people know hockey and see hockey.
Yeah.
Rena, I heard one reporter this week tweeted a very good line, and he said if people called hockey ground hurling, it would get really popular. Did you ever play it? Did you ever have any experience of it at schools level? Because it's usually
at
schools.
No, I suppose I just didn't come across it when I was growing up. Just didn't get the opportunity to play it. Look, I've seen a couple of games. I went to college in UCD, and I saw games up there, you know, and they were outstanding games. It's a lovely, fast game, really skillful game, and you know, I hope the girls do very, very well this evening, and if they got a result, to be unbelievable.
It would be unbelievable, Kieran, wouldn't it? Incredible to think a World Cup semi-final in any sport.
It's absolutely fantastic. When you think the Ireland team went in, they were the second lowest ranked team, 16th in the world, and to get to the last four in the world is spectacular. People talking about kind of the summer of hurling, but it'll be the summer of hockey if they actually get through to the final. You know, it's absolutely amazing what they've done, especially with the resources and the funds they have. You know, they're pushing well above their weight.
Yeah, and this cropped up during the week as well. First of all, they had no sponsor until about 2 months ago, and we reckon Softco have got the best sponsorship with the quickest return ever. If Liberty Insurance did as well with Camogie, it would be fantastic as well. But that is an amazing thing. They only just got a sponsor, and they've had to pay themselves, Kieran. They have been kind of self-funding for the last few years.
Yeah, there was a levy, I think it was at 525 or 550 euro, that the players had to pay themselves to play. But then Softco came in, I think, the last year or so, and they've taken care of that. But that's fantastic for them. But I suppose it's, well, Sonia and really know better for that. But when you're a player, you want to play. I don't think you want to be distracted by trying to raise money and trying to raise funds. You want to concentrate and play in the game and preparing as well as you can for the game. So I think it is an issue across minority sports that the funding isn't there. But it's fantastic to see now that a company like Softco have come in, they've helped the hockey team, and they're going to reap the benefits off the back of this.
The thing that struck me watching them, Sonia, is they're smiling all the time, you know, even during the national anthem. And sometimes, isn't it great to see athletes, even in a World Cup semi-final and quarter-final, so happy about what they're doing?
Well, I think, you know, when athletes you know, when you achieve something that you don't really expect to achieve, you kind of appreciate it so much more, and you get so much more value out of it, you know, that you've gone one more step and you get to play one more round. You know, every game is a bonus.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you go into it thinking like that, then there's no pressure or expectation, and, you know, maybe it only happens one time in an athlete's or a team's career that you go in as underdogs, because then as soon as you become really good, then all of a sudden the focus is a little bit more on you and the expectation is there. So I think, you know, they're living the dream at the moment, progressing, you know, through every round and every game. And, you know, the greatest pressure is probably now, because so many more people are, like us, are talking about it. There's more people watching it. But, you know, they're over there in London and they probably don't know half of what's going on here.
Yeah, apparently Katie Mullen and her, one of her roommates have been singing Christmas songs, because she said to her the first night before it started, this is the feeling you get before Christmas, you know. And so that's a big thing with them now. Can you see the joy in them, Rena?
Oh, absolutely, sure. I mean, after they won the penalty shootout the last eight, they just went nuts. You know, it was fantastic. And I suppose, look, they're in, you know, they're I suppose in a part of the championship that they weren't expecting to be in. And sure, look, it's pure joy. And, you know, it's great that the country are getting behind them as well. It's great. It's great the way sport can lift the nation.
As we said, if we get any updates, we will be passing them on. They've been nerveless, really, I suppose, is what you could say. And Sonia, some of us, the last time we saw you, you were looking extremely nervous. And if anybody has not seen it, they should go online and watch Sonia watching her daughter, Sophie, winning a silver medal at the European Under-18s. Sonia, talk us through, like, what is that like to be as a parent? And are you always that nervous watching her, or what happened?
No, never, really, you know.
Really?
Well, I don't think I am, but there's evidence now to the contrary, I suppose. You know, I think I'm very relaxed and enjoy it. And, I mean, very comparable, I suppose, to Sophie, to the hockey team. She went there with not really any huge expectations. She came from Australia. She'd been running cross country and just had one track race before going out to Hungary.
Wow.
So every race was a bonus. You know, I kept saying to her, you know, well, if you get to the next race, that's great. And she got to the semi-final. And then once she got to the final, then, you know, it really didn't matter the result, you know. But then when you're in a position that you have a chance to win a medal, then you get a bit excited, you know.
Oh,
and you kind of think, well, you got yourself there now, so, you know, hold on. And
800 metres is a very tactical race, and you were literally, you could see you thinking every step of it through with her.
Well, I think what happens is when you understand something and you've been there and done it yourself before, you know the process of how to achieve something. So you try and you run the race in your mind and you play it out a little bit before you even stand on the start line, or before the person, you know, running it stands on the start line. And, you know, it would do similar things if I was up in RTE and watching, you know, when we're watching the championships and commentating on that, you kind of work out in my mind how I think somebody should run a race.
We just don't have the camera on you normally.
No. Don't worry, I'll be avoiding that now in the future.
You know, you've been warned.
I'll be hiding somewhere.
And apart from your experience, your husband and Sophie's dad is Nick Bidot, who's very, very experienced in athletics as well. And how have you handled that? Was it difficult, or did you deliberately not get involved with coaching her and let her do her own thing?
No, I don't think she would want us to coach her. You know, she's very, you know, of her own mind, and she, you know, people say she's following my footsteps, but I think she's definitely cutting her own path. And, you know, she doesn't feel that she has anything to match with me. You know, she's just doing her own thing, and, you know, that's why she's running the 800 and, and wants to keep running that, you know, as long as possible. But no, I mean, it's just leave her off and, you know, train and race with her school friends. And, you know, as long as that lasts and as long as you can kind of carry that through, you know, as you get older, you know, enjoying it and having people to train with and to travel with, then it will last, you know.
And she was young at those longer European under-18s, because she's still only 16, we were saying.
She is, but her birthday is in December, so she's a bit late in the year, so she's a bit disadvantaged there.
That can be a disadvantage.
So she doesn't get to come back around and run in that age group again, except next year she will, but not the year after. So
Was that the worst ever you had to feel to watch her? Was it the most terrifying?
I mean, it wasn't that bad. I mean, people read into it a bit too much, you know. I suppose it's a bit of an adrenaline and a buzz, and you actually, you know, it looks like you're nervous, but I actually enjoyed it, you know. It was great.
Well, I laughed and said, well, now she knows how her dad was feeling. And your dad, John, is here today, and tell us what happened.
What happened?
He rang him.
Oh, he did. He sent me a text message. He said, now you know how we felt. But I think the hardest part was actually watching the semi-final. There was no video of that. Yeah. And because, you know, if the championship ends, you know, at the semi-final, then it's all over. Whereas, you know, everybody wants to run every race or every game that there is to play. You want to be there and be a part of it. And, you know, for me, it was, you know, to get to the final was the biggest achievement. And then once you were there, everything is gravy after that,
exactly. I was curious as well, because your children have grown up in Australia, do they have Corkness in them? Because I just associate Corkness in sport with this never say die attitude. The woman on to my right, Rena's always had it as a player. And I think there is a thing called Corkness, and so many brilliant athletes, whether it's Ronan O'Gara or Roy Keane or yourself and Dervla O'Rourke and Rob Heffernan, there is something about does she have that Corkness in her genes, do you think?
I suppose she probably does, and Kira as well. You know, I think a lot of it is the single-mindedness, you know, and the determination to kind of, you know, if you decide to do something, that you're actually going to do it, and, you know, you're going to find a way to do it. And, you know, Kira, who's my older daughter, she's 19 and she goes to college at Melbourne University, and she's, you know, always had in her mind what she's going to do. Not sports-wise at all.
Political science, you were telling me, yeah.
She's doing a bit of international politics, which is way over my head, you know.
Yeah, but that same determination, single-mindedness.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, so that's, I suppose, we all do our own thing, and Sophie does her own thing.
Christine.
And, you know, maybe that's the Cork thing.
Well, I think it is a Cork thing, and I think whenever Cork athletes hit a block, they get through it. Christine, you're working with athletes all the time. You're from Cork. You've worked in UCC as Deputy Director of Sport for over 30 years. Do you recognise that Cork thing in athletes?
I do, because I suppose the beauty of Cork is it's a strength or a disadvantage at times. There's so much sport goes on in Cork. You talk about Kilkenny hurlers. Hurling is the only sport in Kilkenny.
Yeah.
Cork does such a multitude. So I think anybody who takes sport seriously in Cork has such a huge variety. So their challenge is, how can they prove themselves in that and stay within that remit? And probably another strength or, again, disadvantage sometimes, I think women in sport, if they're particularly in team sports, if they're good at one, they can actually be good at two or three, and combining their times and effort, so they have to be very focused on what they do, and they're very self-focused in achieving.
And that helps you to focus.
And it helps them focus and challenge. And at third level, then, they're trying to combine their sport with their academics. So you're trying to help them with their time management so that they can achieve both. From a parent perspective, they're in college first and foremost to get their education.
Yeah.
We might give them scholarships, so we're saying, you know, your focus is on sport, but we try and say to them, well, look, you're here first and foremost to get your education. Let's help you combine the two, make you the best person that you can, and we'll give you whatever background support that we can so that you can achieve your best in both. And they're very single-minded and very focused on what they're doing.
Yeah. Rena, we know you were a brilliant dual star, 18 All-Ireland medals in two different sports. Were there other sports in your background?
I used to do a lot of running when I was young.
That might explain the engine.
I was running with Blarney and Iscara. I used to run cross countries, and I used to run long distance races. So, yeah.
So it stood to you?
Stood to me, yeah. I won an under 13 All Ireland at 1500. And I kind of, that was when I was under 13. I think I ran again the following year, but I just had too much on. I was trying to combine too much. So
what Christine was stuck. Saying.
Yeah, so it's funny, like what Sonia was saying, what happened was there was a gang of lads training with me at the time. So they were kind of a year older than me. But they kind of drifted off, went their own directions. And I was kind of the only one left there training. So I kind of didn't have a gang to train with.
You didn't
with,
have
so
a support system around
I kind of went to the gang, yeah. So that's how I ended up playing
team sport, going solely into sports. So we never know what you might have done on the track if those guys hadn't left. Do you think that there is a Corkness? Do you think that Cork people have something uniquely competitive that helps them in sport?
I'm not sure. I presume like there's nothing objective really that Cork people have, but I do think there's a huge expectation within the county. Even when Sonia came in the door, or when Christine came in the door, I think one of the first questions Sonia asked was, like, how many from Cork are on the hockey team, you know? Like, we would expect that we'd have some, and I think we've two girls, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think there's two from Harlequins on
it. Yeah, I think there's two Harlequins on it, yeah. So, you know, we do have an expectation that whether it's a hockey team, whether it's a rugby team, you know, whether it's an all-star hurling or football team, that we certainly would be represented well. And
usually, you know,
when you're inside in Cork, I don't think you appreciate that a whole pile, but I think when you leave the county, you know, people do say it to you. Yeah. So
yeah, because it can't be a coincidence that all those sort of iconoclastic athletes who, you know, don't say no for anybody, you know, and so many of them have come from Cork, and sitting in the middle of you is a Kerry man who actually works in Cork. And, you know, some people would say that's a penance to you, Kieran McCarthy, as a sports editor of the Southern Star. But in fact, your beat in the Southern Star means that you are covering some phenomenal athletes. Tell us about, you know, the range of the paper and the sort of athletes you're talking about.
I suppose I'm not going to be left back in the Kerry after I kind of big up Cork so much here. But I have to say, I suppose coming from Kerry, where it's GA orientated, Cork is just, it's the breadth of sports is absolutely phenomenal. The Southern Star, we cover from Beara over to Kinsale, up into the city, up into Macroom, so it's a massive geographical area. And in that area alone, you have the rowers, Gary and Paula Donovan, Shane O'Driscoll, Mark O'Donovan, who are all world champions, Olympic silver medalists. You have Phil Healy, who's at the Europeans this week. She's the world's, Ireland's fastest 100 metre and 200 metre runner of all
this
time.
Year, yeah.
David Hart, the men's David and Conor Hart, the hockey goalkeepers. You have a Lily Delacour. She's a former world champion kickboxer from Bantry. She's a phenomenal athlete. You have Darren Sweetenham, the Munster and Ireland rugby player. You have Conor Horahan from Bandon, who plays soccer at Aston Villa in Ireland. So that's just a taster of West Cork and the variety of the sports there.
Yeah.
And we haven't even mentioned football and hurling.
Yeah, I was going to say,
When Christine mentioned there about the kind of, I suppose, the variety of Cork sports, you get it all in West Cork. There's every sport down there, and it's a phenomenal
place. It's a really interesting point to make, Christine. I'd never thought about it, that huge, huge
it's
range
a huge
of sports.
Huge breadth, and I mean, as you say, yes, so I mean, Cork wants to succeed in them all. I mean, like, and it's both a strength and a weakness then, because I say Kerry, you know, I just say the football, there's a bit of basketball coming into Kerry now at the moment again.
Back
like
again,
the Super League and that, like, but Cork is trying them all, like, and
great basketball
tradition. And even this year now, they're going to have 3-4 men's up Super League, and you have 2-3 women's Super Leagues.
Phenomenal.
Is there that capacity to do that? That'll be an interesting season now, even on the basketball scene this year.
Yeah.
You know?
Kieran, because you actually work out of Skibbereen a lot, one of your specialties, you're probably one of the people in Ireland who knows most about rowing, and because you're covering it all the time. And the European Championships are on at the moment, and we have finalists tomorrow. Tell us about it.
We have, the Rowing Ireland team that are at the Europeans in Glasgow this weekend. They're all from Skibbereen. Ireland sent out 6 athletes, and they're all from Skibbereen. I suppose Skib now, it's the hotbed of Irish rowing. The rowing club is the most successful in the country. Obviously, Gary and Paul won silver in Rio 2 years ago. So I suppose the state of the play at the moment is Gary and Paul in the lightweight double won their semi-final a couple of hours ago. So they're through to the A-final tomorrow, and they're real live medal prospects tomorrow. They won their heat, they won their semi-final today, just half a second from the Belgians. Again, great chance of winning the medal tomorrow. They won gold at the World Cup in Lucerne there a couple of weeks ago, so they're banging form. Another B final tomorrow is Denise Walsh and Aoife Casey. Denise last year was in the single, and she was a European silver medalist in the single last year, and she went to the World Championships where she finished sixth in that final. But the lightweight women's single is not an Olympic class boat. So because was the objective and target for all the rowers and the high point is get to the Olympics. Yeah. They want to race to the Olympics. So the lightweight double is an Olympic boat. So what Denise now is partnered up with Aoife Casey, also from Skib, and who is actually Dominic Casey's daughter.
The
Dominic is the coach for Gary and Paul and Mark and Shane. So they're into the B final tomorrow. So hopefully they'll do well. Aoife's had her leaving cert this year, so they've only had a couple of weeks of training, but it'd be fantastic for them just to give even third or fourth place finish tomorrow to Europeans.
Yeah, would be a big
because
deal.
They want to get to the World Championships, which are on in Bulgaria in September, and there's a bit of pressure on them this week in a way to put in a good performance at the Europeans so they can book their ticket to the Worlds, because they want to get to that level. Because if you're looking towards next year, 2019, at the World Championships in 2019, that's the first opportunity to book your place for Tokyo.
Right.
So they want to kind of compete at a high level as much as they can over the next 12 months.
And Kieran, what's the story then with Mark O'Driscoll? And is it the other men's player?
So we have Shane O'Driscoll and Mark O'Donovan.
Yeah.
Last year, they absolutely dominated the world of the lightweight pair. They won the 3 World Cup regattas, they won European gold, and they won world gold. But the lightweight pair is not an Olympic class boat, so they can't get to the Olympics in that boat. So they had a choice to make. They could either try and get into the double, which is to compete against Gary and Paul.
No choice there. No.
Or they can make the step up to heavyweight. Right. And that they decided to step up to heavyweight, but that's a massive job they've on their hands.
They've competed at heavyweight at these Europeans.
They're competing at heavyweight since the turn of the year. Yeah. So just to explain that, when you're in a lightweight boat, the crew has to average 70 kgs. So Mark could be 71 kgs, Shane could be 69, but has to average 70. So you've gone from two fellas at an average of 70 kgs. Now they're up against fellas who are 100 kgs, 6'3", 6'4", beasts of men who can just pull the boat through the water. So it is a huge, huge challenge. And they've less than 2 years to get this right, to try and qualify for the Olympics. They had their B final this morning. They finished fifth, which is an 11th place finish in Europe.
Yes.
At the fourth World Cup Regatta, they finished 15th. The third World Cup Regatta, they finished 9th. But this year, it's all about progression for them.
Yeah.
They want to put themselves in a place for next year they can go.
And I'm presuming they have to beef up as well. Have they put up weight? Yeah.
They have, yeah. They were in Australia, New Zealand for the first 3 months of the year on a training camp with Gary and Paul. And they came back. They were maybe 8-9 kgs heavier than when they left. So they have to put on muscle mass, but they have to do it the right way.
Yeah.
They can't just bulk up. They have to kind of do it aerobically and physiologically and all this. But they're getting there. But it's a long journey and a long process. And I suppose for Shane and Mark last year, who got used to winning everything, they've had to change their mentality.
Yeah,
because
that's a big challenge.
When you win every race in 1 year, then you get to the next race and you're finishing 15th overall, 9th overall, you're not winning. It does take a certain type of mentality and a mental strength to kind of cope with that, but see the bigger picture, like in the distance all the time, and that for them is to get to Tokyo.
Yeah. Christine, do you have any elite rowers in UCC? I'm presuming you have.
We have. We've allotted the Irish under 23s. Now we're only back from the World Championships, and we had Afrikyo. She's a UC graduate now, but she's still rowing as UCC. So she was in a double with another UC student, Emily Hagerty. So they were the World Championships.
So you must get rowers.
Yeah.
In UCC.
So we've a lot again. It's with the Irish Rowing Centre now in Enniscarra. So they're actually trying to get the rowers to come to Cork. So there's a new CEO now in Rowing Ireland. So I think it's an opportunity now to sit down and try and probably do it more formally.
And you would be the automatic university
close. Our own club operate out from out there.
And the coincidence is that Rena is from Enniscarra, and I was curious, have you ever rowed? Could you have been a rower?
No, I've never rowed.
How could you fit it all in?
I'm afraid the rowing centre is it's a new development in Enniscarra, so I suppose when I was growing up, I never really had the opportunity.
Yeah.
I think my parents were busy enough driving me here and there. Not water as well.
And do you ever see the rowers out training? I saw a sculler here today when we were coming in on the Lee. It's just such a beautiful sight to see.
Yeah, I've gone down to the championships there on two occasions. It's brilliant. There's a great atmosphere around, and the way they glide through the water is amazing.
Isn't
like they're
gorgeous.
They're outstanding. Yeah, and there's a great buzz about rowing at the moment. So I think their membership down there has gone through the roof there since the medals started coming in.
Well, we're world class at it. Yeah. And so world class, Kieran, that you're actually writing a book.
Yeah, I'm writing a book. I suppose it's on the history of Skibbereen Rowing Club, but it's more so, it'll be called What's in the Water. That's exactly what I'm trying to find out, like what's in the water in Skibbereen for this club to produce world-class athletes time after time. Because even going back to 2004, the Olympics, 2008, you had Richard Coakley, Eugene Coakley, you had Timmy Harnaday, Denise Walsh was a former kind of European Olympic youth competitor. So like this club keeps producing world-class athletes, and even at the World Under 23s, like Christine mentioned, you'd Fintan and Jake McCarthy. They're twins.
Twins, yeah.
They're another set of brothers in Skibbereen on the way up. Like, and they finished fifth in the A final in the lightweight double, and they were disappointed with that. They're two brothers from Skibbereen again, who have set their sights on the very top. So
there's almost like there's a high performance culture in that rowing club. Isn't that incredible, Sonia? That like it's almost like they're all driving. Coaching has to be a factor as well. But it's like they're. And I haven't talked to the O'Donovans once or twice. They drive each other on.
Yeah, and I think when you have a successful club or a successful area, it just attracts people to want to be a part of that and to be involved. And, if someone is pretty good at what they do, then they look at the best and then they see how they can join in with that or how they can be a part of it. And, that's, I suppose, it's just naturally set up in Skibbereen, whatever it is down there. I've only ever driven through Skibbereen. I haven't stopped. I was there one time after the Olympics and... but it was pouring rain and all the flags were still up, but it was looking a bit haggard. But I kept going down to, because there's loads of lovely water down there.
Like
I was down in Loch Eyne for a swim, and it was absolutely amazing down there, you know. Yeah. So you can see the attraction of the water in that kind of natural environment, you know. Yeah. And I think when something is in such a nice setting, and then you have the people there to train with, it doesn't matter what the weather is, you know. Yeah. You join in and you just go out there and you do the work.
Yeah,
and it doesn't feel like hard work, you know, when you're actually there with a lot of people who are doing the same thing, and when you have a really good like coaching environment and a good working environment for athletes to work together.
Yeah, the National Rowing Centre in Enniscarra, as you know, Rena, it's on a lake. It's a dam, I think. It's at a lake, but there's a wind that comes down the middle of that, and on a bad day, boy, are they fighting the elements down there. But it's still a beautiful spot.
Yeah, it's a fantastic spot. Yeah, it's just behind the Enniscarra Dam. So I suppose it's great to be making use of that, you know, that lake while it's. Well, it's not 100% natural. I suppose it's knocking around a long time at this stage. And, you know, it's brilliant that the facility is being utilised. And, you know, it's great.
It's
great.
Very clever use, like decentralising our elite sports facilities as well. It doesn't have to be inside in a big city or whatever. Yeah, it's a brilliant spot. But I was down there last year and interviewing them, and the wind and the rain, I'll never forget it. And they had already done 3 hours that morning, and they were going back out. They were having their porridge and heading off back out again. So I was very, very impressed with that. We're probably just going about to take a break, I think. We'll be back soon, and we'll talk to you then.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back to the Saturday panel on Off the Ball, live coming to you from Parkeycueve in Cork, of course. We're here today courtesy of the Camogie Association, it's part of their hashtag Get Together campaign to encourage more people to attend their All-Ireland finals on September the 9th, because nothing beats going to matches together and seeing the games firsthand. And we will have two All-Ireland quarterfinals here live this afternoon when we finish later on. We're just talking here with our panel, and Kieran McCarthy is explaining to us here, as sports editor of the Southern Star, that he's writing a book about Irish rowing, but specifically, we always laugh and say maybe they should just call the Irish team Skibbereen. But when what's the timeline on it, and how much detail will you be going into?
I'm kind of in the middle of it at the moment. I'm down the rabbit hole, so to speak. I've until February next year to finish it, and then I think it hasn't been confirmed yet to put in stone, but towards the end of next year. So like the book is concentrating on Skibbereen Rowing Club, and I said a history book earlier, but it's not a history book. It's more look at what makes this club so successful, and how I'm doing that is by talking to all the characters involved, from the three founding members to right up to now. So it's the club was founded in 78, so that's what it's 48 years of history and interviews. So,
and yet surprisingly, Kieran, that's actually a very young club when we think of it producing Olympic medalists and world championships and European championships. That's incredible.
It is, yeah, because like the club, even when it started winning national championships, it won its first national championship, I think it was 76 with Newell Upton, but since then it's surpassed even clubs that have been there like 50, 60 years before it, and it's gone, I think they won 7 or 8 at the recent national championship, so maybe they have 177, 178 national titles now. So the club is just phenomenal. It really, really is. And if you were down there just to see the kind of, even the basic training kind of clubhouse they have, it's very, very basic.
It's very basic.
It's really basic. Yeah. Like, if you walk into the gym there, some of the weights have been cut from sheet metal by Dominic Casey himself. When Ireland, like Dominic's a coach now, but when Ireland, they go to different European rowing regattas, Dominic would spot bits of equipment that other teams aren't using in other countries, and he'd take that home, and he'd bring it back to Skibbereen, and he'd weld it, and he'd mould it, and he'd make something that would work for the Skibbereen athletes. Kind of, you can't see the room here, but the gym, I suppose, is a quarter or a fifth the size of this room we're in right now.
Really, it's basic.
It's really, really basic. But it's more, they talked about the Corkness earlier and the single-mindedness, but it's the mentality that the sports people and the people involved in the club have. They give everything towards the club. It's phenomenal. They just have this desire to be the best. And out in the River Island, it's like they're born to race, kind of. They race up and down that river every day. Like, it's a fantastic sight to see. And when Gary and Paul were 12 and 13 growing up, Eugene and Richie Coakley were the Olympians, and they'd be training there. But Gary and Paul, as two young pups, used to try and match the lads and try and pass them out. So it's like they're born to race, and it's bred into them from a very, very early age.
Yeah, and born to race, Sonia, I was wondering, as your daughter is now competing internationally, do you race against her, and can she beat you?
No, I did for a short while, but
did
that was short-lived, you know. She got very fast. I was just calculating, because I was talking about this the other day with Ray Darcy, and was trying to work out the last time I ran against Sophie properly, and I made out that she was actually 11 years old, you know,
wow.
when she beat me the last time, and that was, you know, when I was close enough. So, you know, when you have an 11-year-old going past you, then you have to kind of throw in the towel.
As a parent, it's usually when they get taller with you, taller than you. But for you, it's when they get faster than you. Yeah. You were talking so lyrically there about West Cork and how beautiful it is. How much is running our activity still a part of your life, and the outdoors a part of your life?
Still a huge part. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big part of sport in Ireland at the moment. Is there's so much stuff on out there. You know, I went down. So I was actually in Glengariff last weekend for a swim around Garnish Island.
Oh.
And it was on in the evening time. And, you know, I haven't actually been swimming a whole lot this year. I go through phases of swimming or cycling or running and, you know, try and combine them all. But I had this idea. I'd been down there numerous times for the Rebel Tour in September. And I thought, that sounds like a nice idea to swim around in Ireland. And not realizing, you know, how tough it would be.
And there's currents.
But, you know, it was 6 o'clock in the evening. So I thought, you know, what am I going to do the rest of the day? So I was going to do a park run in the morning. But then I found out there was a cycle going out to Mizzen Head. So I thought that sounded a bit more attractive. So I did that in the morning. And, you know, there's just so many events and things on that, you know, you kind of get lost in.
Well, have you
things.
Noticed that even coming home? I mean, I think I've seen around Coachford and in Iscara, that area as well, where there's people out now just taking exercise, just enjoying it, not even in competitive level. But Ireland has got better at providing facilities for it nearly.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the park runs there are fantastic that are
amazing.
Going on every Saturday around the place. You have to take your time when you're driving to Coachford. There's so many cyclists on the road there. So there's plenty of things, for all types of people at all types of levels, you know. So it's just to find your own niche and see what you enjoy.
And after playing competitive sport for so long at the level and the training load even that you had, I remember when you retired last year, one of the things you said was you wanted to spend more time with your family and your friends. And have you got a chance to do that? And what's filling your time now, that all that time?
I'm probably still playing with my club, so I play with Enniscarra and Camogie, and I play with Dunamore in football. So when you add up all that training, it actually ties into
you haven't stopped at all,
an
really.
Awful lot of evenings. Yeah. I was saying like Dunamore would be training twice a week, and Enniscarra would train three times a week. So I wouldn't make all five now, but I'd try and make three or four anyway. So it still takes up an awful lot of time, but I love it. I love training. I suppose the intensity would be down a small bit from what it was. But I think that's okay. You know, it's nice to be, you know, selective at a slightly lesser intensity. And, you know, if I want to go for a run, I can do that without being too worried about being tired for the next session or anything like that.
You run your own business as well?
I do, yeah. I have a physio practice there in Macroom, so that keeps me good and busy as well. So,
are you on your own?
Yeah, I'm totally on my own there, yeah. So.
And would you deal with sports or is it general physio?
So I would say I would deal with about a third would be sports, and then everyone else is just general. So
all our usual ailments.
Yeah, necks and backs and shoulders and hips.
And do you treat any GA players?
We would, for sure.
So you have a real insight into what they're going through.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's a great help to play and to be active yourself, you know. And it's probably helped as a physio to get an old rub yourself every now and again, so you know what they're going through as well.
So who does the physio on the physio?
Who does the physio on the physio? Depends on what team I'm involved with. The team physio would.
Yeah.
I haven't needed anything now this year, so I've been okay. But I suppose, look, having a good understanding of what training suits you and when to pull back, and if you're feeling any niggle, you know, to get your rehab in first, you know.
And I remember you saying that as an athlete when you were playing, that you managed your body so well for those two sports because you knew it so well, and your training helped you to do that, didn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you train smart, it's the best way not to get injured, you know. And you know, being diligent in the off season is hugely important, particularly as you're getting older. And I think, you know, it's happening in both the men's and women's side of it in GA that, you know, our training is getting much, much smarter. And I would say, like, for a player, it's probably getting easier. There's probably
bigger. Do you?
Really? Definitely, yeah. I remember there 10 years ago, we used to be run till you drop stuff, like, you know. But that's out the window now. It's all much, much more technical and much smarter. And, you know, loads are being managed. And, you know, I think injuries are being managed a bit better as well. So Overall, it's all on the up, I think.
And Christine O'Donovan, as Deputy Head of Sport in UCC, you have athletes who are on scholarships, and so they're trying to combine their sport with their academics. And do you make any allowances for it, or how does that work?
We do. As I say, sometimes being on scholarship, a lot of people think it's all about the money. But for a lot of these, it's actually money is probably the incidental part of it. It's what other services we can provide for them so that they can combine the two. And certainly from an academic point of view, you know, again, when we're talking about particularly the water sports, semesterisation came into UCC a number of years ago and actually has made it more difficult for a high-performing athlete because they now have exams twice a year, whereas before they could have focused everything on once a year.
At the end of the year.
Twice a year now is actually more difficult for them because they have two lots of exams to try and encounter. Certainly the water sports go off on training camps and
they
probably
do.
Athletics as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've had some athletes in situations where we're trying to get them sitting exams abroad or somewhere else so that they can combine their study, you know, so they don't have to impact, it won't impact on them, or they don't have to defer it and do it in the autumn. Because again, they could be competing in the summer months. So it's trying to manage their time. I had a race walker in college 1 year, and I arranged for him to sit an exam. He's going to China. And again, and you know, it's not a case, it's easily done. So there's a lot of criteria set up. Again, it must be so that the exam isn't compromised, the result isn't compromised.
And he did his exam
and
online?
He physically had to sit it in China. You know, and it had to be within a plus or minus hour of when it's been sat in Cork.
Wow.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be legit.
Yes.
So that again, he couldn't send the exam back to his friends in Cork and vice versa.
The boys
so
be googling it under the table.
Yeah. So everything, you know, people say, you know, it's not an easy process, but like that's what you try and do to facilitate them. If it's what keeps them going, or sailors on, you know, I had a guy sitting an exam in Croatia, even some of your Sigurdsson or your O'Connor Cups, an hour or two before they sit, you know, playing their exam and their match in Dublin or an O'Connor Cup. I remember invigilating for a student and she was in Waterford. Once we can set up an exam type setting and get the timing right, and the university is happy with the process.
It's very flexible. You're very flexible.
Yeah. So that's a great advantage. You know, and I say it's not an easy process, but like if there's a will, there's a way, and we see somebody serious, then that's the level we'll go to try and facilitate them.
Yeah.
So that they're not compromised. They don't have to defer. So another option is they defer the exam. Let's say now Christmas, they might have to defer it to the autumn.
Yeah.
Which means then they sit it uncapped, let's say, in the autumn. But again, depending on their sport, they might still have a big championship in the autumn, which would still compromise them.
Yeah.
So we try and do the best we can with them and facilitate them. But let's say the O'Donovan brothers, a lot of people probably don't know this, but they're both actually registered to do new degrees in UCC.
I thought Paul was there, definitely.
They both were, and they both got Quirka scholarships last year, but both deferred.
Right.
Because they decided they wanted to train full-time. So, again, the university facilitated that.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see whether one or both decide to sign up this year.
Yeah, we'll come back to you.
So, you know, if someone's at that level, the universities and the colleges will do the best they can to facilitate them.
And Sonia, you went to university in America. Back then, that was probably what was happening out there, or was it?
No, you kind of sat your exams and did them alongside everybody else.
Right,
and
in Villanova,
the kind of way you set it up was that your classes and things that you did it around
training.
It just kind of fit in perfectly with it.
Yeah, but this level of adaptation would
but
be
fantastic.
I've seen
that from the other side with some Australian athletes who have been over in London at training camps over there, and then I've been a supervisor for an exam, and I get the exam, and I have to fill in all the forms and set it up like an exam setting. And I used to make these signs around the house and quiet please, and exam in process, and things like that. And you know, just to kind of create the environment so that they know this is serious. You know, we've got to have a couple of hours here of quiet and
brilliant.
Get
but it shows
done.
How much that academic side has now been developed to help young athletes and to help them to keep both trains of their lives going.
It has, because the age frame of a lot of the high performing athletes are that they are third level students. I'd say the vast majority of them are in third level, so let's try and combine the two.
With GA,
split a year into two. So some athletes, I think we have a sailor this year aiming for the 2020 Olympics, he split his third year into 2 years so that he'll just take an extra year in college so that he can keep his training going and he doesn't get compromised. Well,
Huge adaptation by colleges, but a huge help to them. It's funny because as we talked about this, it struck me the government has just produced a new 10-year plan for Irish sport, and they produced it last week. It's called the National Sports Policy 2018 to 2027, and Kieran McCarthy, as a sports editor in the newspaper, we don't ever, as journalists, a lot of sports editors don't think this kind of stuff is sexy. We love live sport, we love pictures, we love people winning medals. But something like a long-term sports policy for a country? I'm really interested to hear all of your views on it. And maybe, Kieran, we'd start with you. I don't know, did you read it? Did you see it? Did you think that there was anything? Because it's you might explain to people, it's two strands.
There's kind of two facets to it, I suppose. You could look at the elite and high performance element of it first, to kind of what there is more money is going to be allocated towards towards Irish athletes, the elite athletes. So I think by 2027 or 2028, they're going to double. I think it's gone from 110 million up to 220 million. I could be a bit out with the figures there.
Roughly, but right, that's right.
But that's a big step forward, because for a long time, we've mentioned it earlier with the hockey team, that they had to pay their own levies. There was huge huge stress put on athletes in minority sports to raise money and to come up with money. So the fact that they're going to double that, and I think they want to eventually treble it, it has to be a big step forward. And what they're doing as well with the funding for those elite athletes, again, before it was done on an annual basis, but now they're going to do it on a multi-annual basis. What that means, it'll be a bi-Olympic cycle. So instead of an athlete waiting to see will they get their 20,000 this year or 30,000, yeah, will they be demoted in class or from international to world class, it'll now stretch over 4 years. And other countries have been doing that for a long time
now.
Yeah,
they say it's a big positive thing to get that multi-annual funding.
Plan. Sonia and Rena know better than me again, but just for athletes to be able to concentrate on their sport, I think it is like that'll be a relief to the athletes, but also to the different sporting organisations, to know that their athletes will be taken care of. I suppose the other side of it then is, I suppose, the health of the nation. So what at the moment, it's kind of, there's a 43% kind of activity, 43% of the Irish people are active, and they want to kind of put that up to 50%.
Yeah, it's actually plateaued at 43%, they're quite worried about it. It hasn't gone up in recent years.
I suppose one of the concerns too is that I suppose the Irish people are getting older. So I think the average age, we're a nation that's getting older. So to get from 43 to 50 is a big, big jump.
Yes, because of our age, the way our age population is.
We're going to have more people 65 and older very, very soon. So so it's a big ask to jump that 7%, because 7% mightn't seem like an awful lot. But when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people to keep them active, it's a huge number.
Yeah, it's roughly 250,000 people they're talking about to get another 250,000 people active. Rena, you're working as a health professional. And I just wondered, I don't know whether you'd seen this report, but one of the things in the report that jumped out at me was that I think only 24% of people over 65 are active. And yet we say, 65, 50 is the new 40 and 70 is the new 60. You know, older people now are healthier, but they're not more active. And have you come across that?
Yeah, that would be a concern. And I suppose often an older person doesn't really know what kind of activities they kind of should be doing. What's good for them, what's bad for them, are they better off sitting down nearly? So it's really important, that we roll out, kind of education for that group of people, I think what's very important for an older group of the older population in terms of exercise is that sometimes as you get a bit older, walking every day mightn't be the best type of exercise, if you want to build in a bit of resistance kind of training as well. Basic things like sit to stand, step ups, small weights, it's really, really good for your muscle health, your bone health as you get older, because, you're, I suppose, particularly women, you have a natural decline in your strength, and women post-menopause would have a massive decline in their strength. So if your strength declines, then you're more prone to getting much more aches and pains. So, and if you want to do a substantial amount of walking, you also need to have the strength to be able to carry out that walking.
Yeah.
So a mix of your aerobic activity. So walking would be great. Swimming is great. It's good for the joints, the weight bear as well. That's important to get that type of information.
It's interesting about the strength training. And one of the things in this policy, in terms of the general health of the nation, is they're looking at three activities that, people generally, they're going to put money into, and they are cycling, walking and swimming. It's interesting. They're the three that they're looking at. Sonia, I'm really curious, and I think it'd be really fascinating to hear, as somebody who lives in Australia and lives in Melbourne, a city we associate with so much sport and activity, are there long-term plans in Australia? And what differences do you see between lifestyles in Australia and health and sport?
I think they have the same discussions down there, because what happens is that when you're a sporty type of person and you're involved in sport, you're aware all the time of, people around you being active and fit, and you don't see the people who are not active and fit. So it's when all these different reports and studies come out that you realise that there's so many more people out there who can be encouraged to take part in sport. Because, you know, in recent years, it's improved so much in Ireland, you know, people yeah. being outdoors, and it doesn't matter what the weather, people still get out, get fit, get active. You know, when I was growing up, I could be the only person out running. You wouldn't meet a soul. Whereas nowadays, you go out and there's people running, you know, all hours of the day, you see people running, people on bikes, people swimming down in the sea and cove. In Australia, it's similar, but they're nearly a bit kind of fair weather athletes down there.
Really, yeah. Yeah, they like sunshine.
Oftentimes, like, you know, I'd be in different groups for meeting up for a cycle, and you know, if there's any hint of rain, like, they wouldn't be going out. And I said, geez, you wouldn't go out at all if you lived in Ireland.
They wouldn't survive here, that's for sure.
So, you know, I'd be known to go out in all weathers, even though, you know, a lot of the time it's not that bad. You know,
that's
you kind of take the chance, you just go for it. So I think they have similar problems in Australia than
really,
they do
and
here.
And
people envisage it to be a lot more healthy down there.
Yeah, we do.
But I think it's, you know, they have similar issues and you have the same conversations. I suppose because Ireland is so small, you hear things more on the radio and people talk about it more, and it becomes more of a kind of a current topic for people to discuss it. A lot of the kind of general fitness goes kind of underground in Australia. You don't see it as much as you would here.
And would your daughters have had a different health and sport experience in Ireland than in Australia? In other words, if they had grown up here, would there be things that they wouldn't have experienced but they did in Australia? Is the school environment for sport different and better?
The school environment is very pro-sport. But in saying that, Kira and Sophie, they went to different schools. And Sophie's school is definitely more sporty school than Kira's school. So in Sophie's school, they have compulsory sport every Saturday. So no matter what level of athlete you are, there's like an A team and there's an F team, you know. So
everybody
plays. And everybody has to go and take part and be involved. Now, they are changing that a little bit now because they've worked out that some of the people on the bottom team, you know, they didn't really want to be there and they weren't benefiting much from it. So instead now, they're going to try and implement a kind of a general fitness thing for people who are not very competitive. And, you know, you can't force people to do sport if they don't want to do it, but you can educate them on how to be fit and to learn, I suppose, fit for life at an early age.
And to find things they enjoy.
And to realise that, you know, you can be active and you can do things, but you don't have to be competitive. Mm-hmm. You know, you can take part and you can enjoy it and it can be fun.
And that's exactly what this plan is talking about. It's talking about getting Ireland healthier on one side, and then there's a whole other section on elite sport. Christine, the one thing that interested me this is your area in UCC is sport and developing sport and athletes is, there's no mention in that plan anywhere of third level. And I thought that was extraordinary because the guy who used to work for the Irish Sports Council is now very involved, Sonny will know him, in the American Olympic Association, right? And he says that the NCAA system, in other words, the collegiate system in America, they think that that is worth millions to the American Olympic teams because all of their athletes develop so strongly through collegiate sport, which is what Sonia also was involved in out there. There's no mention of it in this. Not one mention of it.
That's surprising, now, because a lot of the organisations have come to the realisation of the value of supporting third level sport. I mean, the FAI have only kind of, like, you have the World Student Games. Now, again, you're probably talking about the high performers there. So you have World Student Games. A lot of the high performing sports didn't actually embrace that before, didn't have it in their high performance plans. More and more are now putting it on in their high performance plans because they see it as a pathway for further students. The FAI are now help funding the soccer teams, the men's and women's teams. Basketball Ireland are only coming back on stream. They still haven't been funding it, which surprises me again because the level, most of your Super League players are at third level colleges and they haven't embraced it. Athletics Ireland do embrace it for the World Swim Ireland. So a lot of the associations are. So it surprises me it's not a major focal point because I would say 3/4 of the high performing athletes in Ireland are probably going through the third level system. And there should be a system to support them and to finance them because on this now, I mean, they are talking, there's a seminar in November coming up that they are looking at high performance and third level, so maybe it becomes a subset of it somewhere along the line.
Right, interesting, yeah.
That they are looking at it and from a scholarship perspective. But as I say, it's not necessarily all about the money for them a lot of the time, it's about the additional supports.
Yeah,
And they are seeing that they are more crucial.
They're more crucial, and also things like having access to a high performance gym, like the MARDEC, and all our universities are providing athletes with those sort of things. Kieran, one of the things that caught my eye in it was about volunteers, and it's so interesting you're talking about Skibbereen and how rowing has developed and developed through volunteers in it. They reckon that under this survey, they reckon 400,000 people in Ireland at the moment are involved in volunteering in sport, and that each one of them gives, on average, 3.5 hours every week. And the value of that in economic terms, they price it at something between 250 million to 350 million. That's worth that much. That volunteerism is worth that much economically to sport. And isn't that amazing? And how important are volunteers? Like, just shows it.
I'd actually go further and say volunteers are priceless, because without them, a lot of the sports people can't do what they're doing. And I was actually talking to the Billy Good yesterday. He's the Bending Athletic Club president. And he was actually telling me of his concerns that volunteers are getting less and less going forward. And he's worried for the future that we won't have that many people volunteering. He thinks that the society is changing. And he's right, that his generation were more open to volunteering. But you can't put a price on what they do. What they do, they help facilitate the sports people, and they kind of lay the platform for them to go and do what they do best. So I suppose there is a worry going forward that if we have less volunteers, and I think that's actually right across the board. You hear it in GAA as well. Mm. A lot of GAA clubs say that it's harder to get people to volunteer to go on the various boards, to get people to go to the club games for stewards and so on. So it's fantastic. There's 400,000 people doing it, but we've got to keep doing it. You know, kind of, there's no point saying fantastic, we've 400,000 people now, but we need to be encouraging younger people to get involved. And Billy Good is making the point to me that athletes, let's say Bandon Athletic Club, for example, former athletes should come back in again and help out. You know, they should volunteer their time. Castlehaven GAA Club down in West Cork, they put an emphasis on their former players to come back in and coach. Like, they have to do that, you know. And if you, a former player at Castlehaven, there's an onus on you to come back and help the club, whether that's coach to under sevens, under eights, but you have to help out. I think that's fantastic. I think, I know you can't make someone volunteer, if a club has given you so much, you really should try, if possible, I know you've work and life, all that, to put something back to safeguard the next generation coming up, because someone volunteered to help you get there in the first
place.
Absolutely.
Rena Buckley must have experienced so much of that, because GAA is built on volunteerism and volunteer coaches.
Oh, absolutely, and it's in our communities, and the amount of volunteers you have in the community is phenomenal, you know. And, you know, I'm so appreciative of all the people who have, you know, given their time to me, and, you know, to my sister, to my brother, and to everyone around the place. It's been huge, but I would agree that volunteerism is, you know, it's crucial, and, you know, it's up to the next generation always to keep it up, and please God we can keep it up. And I suppose life is getting busier, you know, people are working longer hours. Yeah, I think people are working longer hours, you know. Both parents are working in a lot of houses, and, you know, time is precious. But at the same time, you know, sport is priceless as well. And, you know, it's such an integral part of life and of health and, you know, of enjoyment and of fun, you know. So, you know, we need to keep up the volunteerism and need to keep sport alive in all our communities.
Well, it's a great place to take a break. We'll just take a quick break now. Unfortunately, we're going to lose Sonia, who's taken a quick dash off. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for Sonia Sullivan.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back to the Saturday panel in Páirc Caoimh. My name is Cliona Foley, and we have some fantastic news for you. Ireland are leading 1-0 in the World Cup semi-final. A goal from Anna O'Flanagan at the end of the first quarter. So we'll bring you any other updates that are coming. But imagine that, Ireland are winning a World Cup semi-final at the moment. That's just fantastic. It's a stick game. Rena Buckley is beside me here, 18-time All-Ireland winner. And it struck me in the past week, we've fallen in love with hurling all over again. The country has gone hurling mad. And I was curious as to whether we're almost romanticising it too much at the moment, because suddenly from last weekend, everybody went hurling crazy. Last year we were saying, oh, they're playing too many sweepers. Now we love it again.
Oh, it's been brilliant. It's been some championship. I mean, we were all wondering how the new system would go in terms of the provincial championships, and we were blessed in Munster to have such a tight, closely contested matches, and the standard was outstanding. And you know, we're blessed at the moment, the players we have, they're at such a high standard, and the matches were so tight, and you know, it's just a joy to watch them and to celebrate them. And you know, I'm looking forward to the semi-final, and I'm looking forward to the final.
And we're not even mentioning Cork.
I know, and geez, my heart went out to the Cork lads the last day. You know, they really gave it everything, and you know, they were in with a great chance to win the game. And but look, you have to give it to Limerick. They went all the way. But you know, we'd be very, very proud of our Cork lads. They really gave it their best shot.
Kieran, we're all talking about how brilliant it's a golden summer for hurling, but that notion of playing extra time last weekend, like we could see Seamus Harnady and a couple of the lads, we saw them limping back out for extra time. You get a replay in a provincial final. Should there be extra time in the All-Ireland semi-finals?
I don't think so, because if you look at it, they're still amateur athletes. I know people can say they train like professionals, but they're still amateur, and they've played 90 minutes, and that's what a professional footballer, like Paul Pogba and his 200 and something grand a week, plays 90 minutes and he gets to recover then after that. But these lads go back in, they play their 90 minutes, they go back into a full-time job this week. It's a bit unfair, I suppose, when you put fatigue and extra time into your decision-making isn't the same. And like one simple mistake could cost the team, you know. And it's not fair after, I think, like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 months of training for a fellow who's fatigued, and he might make the wrong decision at the wrong time to cost his team a place in an Ireland final. On the other hand, they have tried to condense the inter-county calendar for clubs, because that's still an issue in the GA, the kind of club v inter-county. So there is two sides to it. Like, you've at the moment, like, club players are sitting idle. They really are sitting idle. Just again to mention Castlehaven, I know I'm bringing it back to West Cork again.
No, we'll allow you.
But I was just chatting to their manager, Liam Collins, during the week. They played their first round game back in April in the Senior Football Championship, and they don't know when they're out again. You know, kind of, so you've 3, 4, 5 months of a break between the first round and the next round. It's very hard.
Yeah, I actually think I saw during the week that the Limerick Senior Football Championship now is cancelled until the hurling is over. Probably because there's a few dual players. But again, that doesn't make an awful lot of sense. Christine, what was the feeling in Cork last weekend again? Just about, I suppose, the new format of the championship, and were Cork unlucky because they had a very long break as well from the provincial final, and there was an argument that maybe they were sitting out too long.
They had, because again, I suppose, back to the same old thing, are you better off playing a competitive game than training week in, week out? So some people are now saying actually winning the provincial title, it could actually be a disadvantage to you because you have this big long break. Whereas Limerick had the momentum, they had matches, they had tough matches,
yeah,
so they were going ahead for it, you know.
Match again.
So that meant they were match fit. Some of the players probably went back training with the club teams as well. So, but again, I suppose the big discussion afterwards, it was, you know, why did weren't Cork utilising their panel? Mm. As you say, you mentioned Seamus Harrandy, why bring someone hobbling back out onto the pitch if you have a squad of 30, 35 players? When are they going to get the experience if you're not, don't put them in there. But as you say, there were probably one touch of winning at normal time, that's the fine margin of winning and losing a game.
Yeah, and Limerick bringing all those subs and they get all the scores from them.
So definitely,
well,
you know, Limerick's time, you know, team management definitely got them over the finish line, so they had the strength and depth. But like, it's still a Cork young team. I know you can say Limerick is, so that experience you'll hope will stand to them.
Yeah.
And that players will come back bigger and stronger.
Rena, we're here today, we're sponsored today by the Camogie Association, and it's part of their hashtag Go Together campaign to encourage people to go to the All-Ireland Finals on September the 9th, because nothing beats going to matches together and seeing a game together, if you like, at first hand. The time that you spent playing from Cork, what transitions have you seen? What improvements have you seen in terms of the game of Camogie and also the structure and the competitive structure of Camogie? Because you've seen the big changes when you were there.
Yeah, like, I suppose I started playing with the Cork Camogie team in 2004. And so I played up until last year, 2017. So I suppose over that period, there's been big changes. There's been changes in terms of the, you know, we have a separate Munster Championship to the All-Ireland Championship. So we have a round-robin section in the All-Ireland Championship. So I suppose I've kind of always liked that structure in that you get a pile of games in the summertime as an inter-county player. Now, obviously, on the flip side then, if you're a club player,
club is losing out.
You certainly don't get a pile of competitive games in the summer.
Yeah. But Camogie had that round robin thing before the GAA took
with
it
long
on.
Time, yeah, with long time. And you know, I think it's a great system. I really enjoyed it when I was playing.
The game itself then, I mean, last year's All-Ireland was phenomenally exciting. A thrilling finish, Cork, that famous Julia White point.
Absolutely,
but one
yeah.
thing that struck me about it was there were no goals and it was a low-scoring final and teams are using sweepers now. And what are your views on that
so
in Camogie?
Suppose the things that have come into Camogie, like every other sport, I suppose there's a lot more more tactics at play. So, like, while there always has been tactics, I suppose the tactics that we have now are much more... they're based on hard evidence, they're based on match videos, they're based on, you know, stats of the opposition. There's a reason why you go out to play one way one day and the next day you might play in a different way. You know, you mightn't just have six backs, you might have, you know, certain backs marking certain forwards, you know. You know, all the matchups are correct.
Yeah.
The forward line might play one way against a certain defence and a different way against a different defence. So there's certainly
really tactical as well.
Much
now.
More tactical, yeah. I suppose puck outs are looked into a lot more, and you have the video evidence to be trawling over and over again. You know, so instead of going off a hunch or what you feel after watching a game, you know, you can actually sit down and really analyse it. And like even the hurling last weekend, you saw there was a huge analysis of the puck outs.
Yeah.
I suppose then the other big change that I've seen over the years would be the change in terms of our style of training. So while I would feel there hasn't been a whole change in terms of the skill level, the skill level I think in Camogie has, you know, and Cork has always been high. And you know, when I started, we were playing against a very strong Tipperary team, and their skill level was outstanding.
Yeah. They almost invented the more aerial form of
yeah,
Camogie.
Absolutely.
That Tipperary
they were
team. They were a seminal
Tipperary
team.
Yeah, there were some excellent players. You do know. Uno Dwyer in the back line, you had Eimear MacDonald in the forward line, you know, there was great players on those teams. But I suppose the big change has been in terms of conditioning. You know, the top teams now are certainly very well conditioned and have been over the last number of years. And even just from looking at the team alone, you know, the physique, you know, it's very obvious, you know, teams are doing an awful lot of work. Teams are training very, very well. While they're training hard, they're also training very well.
Training smart.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, people are very fresh coming into games. You know, whereas when I started, people were trying to play club and county. And now, you know, there's a bigger volume attached to playing inter-county. And, you know, you kind of don't have either the time or the ability really to play the two.
Yeah, because it's at such a level now.
It is. It's a very high standard. And, you know, it's great to have our national sport at such a high standard.
Yeah, well, we're going to have two All-Ireland quarterfinals out here this afternoon. It'll be interesting to hear your views on them. Dublin, if you like, were in some ways the story of the Liberty Camogie Championships last summer because they got into an All-Ireland semi-final. They hadn't been there for years and they're back in a quarterfinal against Galway this afternoon. How do you think that one go?
Yeah, I suppose... Dublin certainly had an excellent year last year, and you know, they didn't show up to the semi-final either just to make up the numbers.
No.
They really gave it their all, and they gave Kilkenny a very good test on the day. But I suppose when you be looking at Galway and Galway, you know, we're talking about skill level within Camogie, and you know, while some teams have kind of come and gone, you know, over the time I was playing, I've never ever came up against a poor Galway team. You know,
yeah.
They always have an excellent team. They've always got a high skill level, and throughout the team, you know, they're an excellent team. And I'm sure today, I think they'll probably just be a step ahead of Dublin. I expect Dublin to put up a great performance. And their work rate, I expect, will be exceptional.
They have a very good half back line as well.
They do
really good half back line. Yeah,
but I expect that, you know, Galway's, I suppose, strength and depth, you know, will bring them over the line, I suppose, in the last maybe 10 minutes.
And that's the second game here this afternoon at 7:15. The first one is an All-Munster, Waterford v Tip. It's a real derby game. What do you think of that one?
Yeah, that'll be a very tight game. You know, it's brilliant for Waterford to be in a quarterfinal. You know, they're really progressing along, you know.
They only went up senior in 2016.
2016,
yeah.
This is their second year at senior level, you know. So they'll be looking forward to today and... I suppose there's a lot more pressure on Tipperary. I mean, Tipperary are, I suppose, their favourites to win the game today. I expect Waterford will be probably defensive from the start. You know, I expect that they will try and shut Tipperary down. But again, you know, it's on in Páirc Uí Chaoimh here, a big expansive field.
Yeah.
I would expect that, you know, Tipperary will have the upper hand, you know, towards the end of the game.
They both have these really brilliant individual scorers. Beth Carton for Waterford is the
absolutely
star scorer, and Cáith Devan then. And the interesting thing about them is Beth Carton plays in UL with an awful lot of the Tipperary teams. You probably know this, Christine. So they will have a really big handle on her, and I think they'll be really interesting to see how they'll mark her today.
Absolutely, and I suppose Niamh Rackett is another one there from Waterford, and I suppose definitely without a doubt the Tipperary management will be, you know, focusing their strategy on stopping those two players. So I suppose then it comes into, you know what's Waterford's strength and depth, and I just think maybe Tipperary have an upper hand in that. You know, they probably have a few more scorers.
Yeah, I think so as well. That's one thing
Waterford.
You would say, they have a bigger spread of scorers.
Exactly,
definitely.
So
they have Orla Dwyer, and actually while we have you, we should ask this question, because there's a notion now, she's a dual player,
yes,
and she had games up against each other this season, and there is increasingly a notion that the demands on female GA players now are so great that the dual player, it's almost virtually impossible. And also there's more live coverage of Camogie and football, so sometimes their schedules just can't be matched. What do you think the future is for female dual players?
Yeah, and I suppose the other thing that's happening as well is, like this year, the two All-Ireland finals are two Sundays in a row. So
yeah,
certainly the dual player is a much harder role to play now. You know, you have round robin systems in Camogie. You know, there's an extra games put into the Ladies Football Championship this year. There was a group after the Provincial Championships before the quarterfinals. So it's definitely getting more and more difficult for a dual player to maintain playing at intercounty standard. But look, there are players. Owner Dwyer is one trying to do it. Libby Coppinger and Hannah Looney from Cork are also trying to do it. And like, my opinion would be that while it is possible, the association should facilitate that where possible, you know. I think if players are willing to do it, and if there's a possibility that they can do it, I think they should be supported in doing it.
Right. Christine, I think one or two of the Cork players are probably in UCC as well, aren't they?
They are. Rena mentioned the two there, Libby and
Hannah
Looney, and Jovemi O'Connor then as well. So, you know, they all played Ashbourne with UCC this year, and there's another four or five players as well on the team. And many of them, you know, are dual players as well. So it's a difficulty combining the two, but yet there's a lot of, most of the intercounty players, again, are third-level students. So, again, it's combining both. And I think the strength of the Ashbourne Cup is probably helping some of the weaker counties now, with the girls playing with the strong teams in the colleges level. It brings them back to their counties, and, you know, they're upping the standards and the training level. So I think that's helping bring on the Waterfords and the Tipperarys now again.
Yeah, Rene, it looks like a couple of those teams, Dublin, Waterford, Tip, they just need to make that jump up to meet Kilkenny and Cork and Galway, really. Doesn't that what it looks like? How do you do it?
Yeah, I suppose it takes a huge effort, I suppose. Look, you need to get, I would be of the opinion, you need to get in your strength and conditioning coaches. You need to spend a couple of years at that. You know, you need to be operating athletically at a high enough standard, and then you just need to keep chipping away, keep working on the skills of the game. You know, that's the basics that you need to have right. But I think to get up to the standards of the Kilkennys, the Galways and the Corks, you need to have your strength and conditioning at a high level as well.
So that's a key thing for you. That's
key
interesting.
Thing,
interesting. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, look, we've had a great afternoon here at Off the Ball in the Saturday panel down here in Páirc Uaibh. We've had a brilliant panel. I'd just like to thank you all, first of all. First of all, a few people to thank in production, Pather Brannock, and also Sue Murphy, who put the whole programme together. Thanks to our live audience who are here, but especially can we say thank you to Rena Buckley, Kieran McCarthy, and Christina Donovan. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.